It's a way of undermining those basic dynamics in us. Okay? Other questions?
I ask a question. We were talking about want and desire a second ago. Can we make a distinction in the language we're using now between want and desire and clinging to the result of that want and desire? I mean, can we okay for ourselves the fact of want and desire? Can we not isolate and shun that part of our experience if we don't cling to the results?
What are you trying to protect here, Joe?
Want desire.
You want desire?
Well, I want desire. I want to desire bodhicitta. I want to desire to be a bodhisattva. I want to desire, things too. I want to desire good food. I want to desire sensual gratification.
Well, the language gets very slippery here, both. Just the way we use language, rather. It's not really dependent on the language, Tibetan or English. But one can tie oneself up in philosophical knots very easily around here. Why do you want to desire?
I misspoke. Actually, I do desire.
Yes. So what's the problem?
We were just speaking about desire being a problem.
Okay. In the early formulations of Buddhism, if you look at the 12 links of interdependent origination, and you still find this, I mean, very much in the Theravada, and you also find it quite extensively in Hinduism, TM, for instance. Wanting is seen as the source of struggle, suffering in life. And so the most direct route would be seen to be to decrease wanting. That naturally, or logically, I'm not sure it naturally, but logically leads to a life of withdrawal away from sensory stimulation, because that stimulates desire. Okay, and so that gives rise to the monastic anchorite hermitage, which is exactly where Buddhism started. Over time, and the reasons for this are rather obscure, and one can develop a number of theories, but I'm not going to go into those this evening. It became clear that desire comes from holding a sense of self. And holding a sense of self comes from not knowing how things actually are. So a second way of breaking the cycle arose, and that was going straight to the ignorance which sets the whole thing in motion. And that is the basis of the Mahayana approach, and doesn't imply a life of withdrawal or seclusion, or, you know, because you aren't really concerned with reducing desire as a path so much as coming to know how things are as a path. And so there's a very definite difference in flavor there. And Mahayana actually makes use of desire to undermine the desire that is organized around the sense of self. And that's exactly what taking and sending is about. Let me desire the unhappiness of others. Let me have that. And it generates friction with the with a conditioned desire. And the idea is that when enough friction is generated, both burn up. But practically speaking, well, in the way that we train here, we don't train in not desiring. We train in knowing. And so we can make use of these techniques to generate that friction that I'm describing. But to do that, you adopt the framework that, yes, desiring my own happiness creates a sense of separation from the world, and that's what produces suffering. Okay? Now, it's quite possible. Did we do this last week? We did. We talked about experiencing desire itself.
Yeah,
we did a little. We went through a little exercise. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you experience desire itself, again, the problem here is believing. You believe the desire, and you believe that the desire is a fact. And so you always act on it. And that's what creates problems. No? You enjoy good food. Okay? Does that mean you have to have good food all the time? Okay. But if you take it as a fact, then you have to have good food all the time. And that's what generates suffering. But if you can experience not only the object of the desire, but the desire itself is simply an arising in mind, then it ceases to be a fact, and one is free. Okay? So it isn't so much not desiring that we're aiming for, but not getting caught in the apparent reality, the way it arises to us as, now I have to have this. Yes? In many respects, yeah. Because whenever we desire something, we collapse down to the keyhole and we miss everything else. Okay. Let's hear a bit about your experiences with this in terms of reflecting and thinking about it. Yes.
13. Even if you have done nothing at all and someone still tries to take your head off, spurred by compassion?
Spurred by compassion is you. It's not,
well, in your translation, that wasn't clear.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
And so the first time I read that, I thought, so this person is going to take off my head before I have the chance to do something wrong. So in a sense, they're doing me a favor. Well, that's an interesting perspective. And then I went back and looked at it elsewhere and saw, out of compassion, take all of his misdeeds.
Yeah.
Which then made it clear. But so it was a way of, maybe unintentionally shifting me into a completely different
okay.
angle.
Right. I'm not quite sure how to address that in English, but I can see the ambiguity. Yeah.
A semicolon.
After all. No, I think it's going to be anything. It's going to be a dash. But it's still not correct. Anyway.
How about put it at the end? Take all of his.
Well, then you get into a bunch of other troubles. Mm-hmm. Julia.
No, put a period after all. Right. Starting the sentence. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This probably builds on the Kanban question.
Okay.
George, but in these two verses, I have a real problem with the boundaries and limits.
Yeah, Tonglen gets kind of makes nonsense of modern concepts of boundaries. So what was your problem?
Well, earlier we were talking about bad friends, people who use you. So is there a distinction here between, I know exactly what I'm resisting.
and what would that be?
Well, having somebody kind of devour me in some way by, taking my money or sort of taking my head off or
Well, I think we discussed this last week, or maybe it was the week before. You can only do these practices if you can stay soft in the experience. If you harden up, then you're engaging in suppression, and you're actually generating something counterproductive in you because of that. Now, if you're able to stay soft, and I don't mean by that being wimpy, I think you understand that. It's soft in the mind. You know what I mean?
Maybe open is a better
word. It's not quite, and there's another quality. Yeah, relaxed, definitely. Yes, but not, you're not necessarily fully relaxed. There has to be some give in you.
So, that, holding on.
Supple. Yeah, supple is good. Mm-hmm. Let's take a somewhat concrete situation. If a person insults you, let's say, and you harden up inside, so there's no movement. You know what I mean by that? Mm-hmm. I'm not being very articulate this evening, but okay. And you try and do taking and sending there. Well, your anger is already so set that you're forcing something. Mm. That's counterproductive.
And it's unreal, it's superficial.
Exactly. That's why I said you start suppressing stuff. And people make this mistake all the time. In order to do taking and sending, when somebody insults you, you have to be able to experience your own pain and for that to be okay. And because that's okay, you can now take in the pain that the other person must be feeling to cause them to insult you. Yeah. But if you can't be in your own pain, and that's what I mean by the softness, you have that suppleness, then you're going to, when you try to take in the other person's pain, you're just going to be suppressing yours, which means you're shutting down on your own experience. That's counterproductive. Now, there are various ways of keeping that softness or suppleness in the mind. One of them is actually regarding everything as a dream. But that's a fairly sophisticated one. Before one gets to that one, however, if you're able to be aware and be, okay, that hurt, I didn't like that. If you're acknowledging that experience in yourself and you're able to be with it, you're not going to get into you're not going to be devoured. And so the boundary problem doesn't arise. Because you're sufficiently awake to your own pain, that you don't drop out of the picture, which is what happens when you're devoured, is you're consumed by the other. So you have both your pain and the other person's pain, the anger that they're obviously expressing, and you use taking and sending to open to that, which further decreases the tendency to react. And don't forget the other part of taking and sending, which is you give in that moment your own sense of presence, clarity, peace, suppleness of mind. And by giving that, you are connecting with where you are. And so you don't take the insult personally. It is simply an arising, which again is moving us towards the dream instruction a bit. And I don't feel I'm explaining this very succinctly, but are you getting the idea? Julia?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. But it's a very important point, because a priori, or you know, at first glance, not a priori, it looks like taking and sending is like, okay, just walk all over me.
Exactly.
A key point in here is your own intention. My intention is to use what arises in experience to wake up. But you only can use what arises in experience to wake up if your mind is supple. If it's hardened up, you can't use it, so it's not the appropriate thing to be doing. Okay? Joe?
I just realized something. One of the problems I was having was a basic misunderstanding, and it was, and it comes out of the Christian tradition probably, I was recognizing as making the other not equal, but more real.
Yes, that's right.
And that's
the
boundary gets broken down.
Yeah.
And that's not the point.
No, that's right. Yeah, I mean, neither of you are real.
Yeah.
Yeah. The idea of the thief.
Yes.
Ah, yes.
In the Dalai Lama's commentary, he told a story about Padre Zongpo. He said that he was heading back to the monastery with many offerings and was robbed. As the robber was leaving, he was heading back towards where Padre Zongpo received the offerings. He warned the thief to go a different route as he might be captured.
Such a Protestant attitude.
what if he got caught and the people who were going to catch him were going to beat him to death? What about the karma they would incur by having beaten him to death? Well,
cut off his hand.
Yeah. Okay. Now, this is a very good point, and we get caught in this because of cultural influences in our culture. Now, compassion is being present with the pain or suffering of another. Okay? It's not about trying to control the situation.
I thought compassion was doing the right thing.
No. Well, you should fire him. Or her, whoever it may be.
He's given different instructions at different times.
Yeah. The notion, the right thing. I may have used the word appropriate. I'm not sure I would have used the right word right.
I don't mean right in the sense of right and wrong.
Yeah.
It's right in what is the correct action at that
moment. Yes. Okay. Let's take a look at Tome Zongpo. Here's the thief. He just took his wallet. And he sees the thief heading off towards town, and he knows what's going to happen there.
It just isn't going to be captured.
Pardon?
This thing is going to be beheaded.
Well, in Indian or Tibetan or Muslim society, if you were... I mean, Muslim society, the punishment for theft was your hand was cut off. That was the punishment. I think in Sharia they're trying to reinstate that. Absolutely. Yeah. Sure. I mean, in Britain, if you were caught, you were put in stocks and.
You were hanged for catching your sheep.
Yeah, theft was taken quite seriously. So you know what's going to happen to this person. Now, I mean, maybe I'm completely corrupt here, but if I can relate to Tome Zongpo here, I mean, there's the thief. He's got my wallet. You're going to get caught if you go that way.
Maybe the thing.
Well, but this is where I think this is where it goes into control. You're trying to control his path. You're trying to, you have a picture of what he should be doing and how he should be progressing. And once we get a picture in our mind, we've stepped out of the kind of immediate response which characterizes compassion.
But isn't telling him he's going to get caught also exercising control?
No, you're going to get caught. Leave the decision up to him.
But then, now that this brings up another one of my favorite stories that you told. I don't know whether it was Buddha or another teacher.
I'm getting hung.
Who was traveling with a caravan through the mountains, and the mountains were full of camels. And the caravan settles down for the night. Buddha, whoever the teacher was, takes a walk, comes over a rise, sees a camp of bandits, and hears them talking about getting up before dawn to murder everyone. He waits till they go to sleep, he sneaks into the camp, he kills the bandit leader himself. The next morning, the bandits awake, they're confused, they're terrified, they run away. The reason that he did it was to prevent the bandit leader from accruing all the bad karma of killing everyone in the caravan. He was willing to take on the bad karma of killing the bandit himself.
Yes. Okay, now apply that principle to the Tome Zongpo.
Well, but he's, in your terms, he's controlling
his... There's a second. What are you... You're Tome Zongpo now. You've just been robbed. What are you willing to do so that the thief doesn't experience the results of his actions? To me, what it means is, look, you're obviously hard up. You didn't get all of my money. Here, take it all, and if anybody asks you, you tell them that I gave it to you. Because I don't want you to get caught as a thief. Only if you're willing to take on all of that karma. Are you? Yeah. But
for murder.
Next time we're in a difficult situation, I'll hold you to it. And it's the story there is one of the Jataka tales from Buddha's previous stories about Buddha's previous lives, and they are examples of compassion. But look at the cost. Look at what Buddha was taking. I mean, it's a very powerful example of taking and sending. I'm going to take this on so that this person doesn't. It's very different from saying, oh, you've robbed me, I'll just let you go and you're going to get caught. Very, very different situation. But on the other hand, you turn around and say, no, you take everything and you tell everybody that I gave it to you. And I will back you up. That's very different. And that kind of thing is the kind of kindness or openness that might change a person's heart. Way more than getting caught and punished will. Follow? Okay, Susan?
I was just going to say that it also seems to involve not being attached to what was taken and to not take personally being wrong.
Yes.
Yeah. It makes it easier to see the situation more clearly because you're less reactive.
I'll give you a different example. When I was studying martial arts, we were being instructed on what to do if somebody pulled a gun on us. And one of Larry's senior students was his assistant instructor. This had actually happened. And the instructions were, you stay absolutely calm and you do exactly what the people say. But the big thing is to stay absolutely calm, no matter what the hell's going on inside you. And he described a situation in which a couple of young guys pulled a gun on him, and give us what, no wallet, and he was just completely calm, because those people are really, really on edge. And if you get on edge, that's when they pull the trigger. But if you stay calm, you increase not only your chance of survival, but the chance they won't commit a murder. It becomes really important.
Is that because they feel your calmness?
They feel your calmness. And so, hey, you know, okay, this is going okay. Okay, nothing's happening. Yeah, we're out of here. And that's right. But if you get upset, things like that, then that throws them off. That's when bad things happen. And that's not a particularly easy thing to do. But that's how you increase your likelihood of getting out of those situations alive.
Yeah. I was held up in New York with a gun once, and not intentionally, but I became extremely calm. And I became so calm that I got conversational. I said, is it okay if I keep the guitar and you guys take everything else because I need it to teach? So it was so conversational. And it all was just like, yeah, okay, you keep the guitar, we'll take this. It just changed things so much because there was no I think with tenser. I took the whatever they were tenser. If
they were tenser than
tenser
you,
than me, and they saw that it wasn't really a threatening situation, wasn't going to become that, and it became just almost a strange normal
transaction.
But it also was. I'm thinking about this because it wasn't really. I wasn't feeling like I was getting rocked. I wasn't having a reaction like you're stealing from me, you're doing something bad to me. It became something else. Something like this. It just reminded me that somehow it was more, there was something else going on. It was something like this.
Shock, maybe?
No, I wasn't even in shock. I mean, I really wasn't. It was just like some sort of combination of something deeper, I think.
The shock comes afterwards. It's not at the time. Sometimes you go through a situation like that, and then sometime later, you'll go into shock about it. Now, when you were contemplating this, that's what was going through your mind. What were you actually experiencing, Deborah?
Well, it was confusion because I didn't feel like it was compassion.
Yes, but what do you feel about the robber? It's not this person. Even if someone driven by desperate want steal or make someone else steal everything you own. What do you feel about the robber?
Oh, actually, I felt sorry.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that the wrong answer?
No, it makes me curious because it doesn't jive with the confusion. So, why is the person stealing? How's him going to jail? Help him.
Because, as I said, it just brings him up short with reality and maybe makes him reconsider his choices. Rather than helping him along his life of crime. And also, on the inner level, the Buddha said that unwholesome thought is the most dangerous thing. Virtue is the most precious treasure. So, it also seemed like you wouldn't want to encourage that thief either or help unwholesome thoughts along.
There's the robber. He's just taken your wallet, your jewelry, whatever. What were you feeling at that time?
Fear.
Yeah.
Even though he took it and left.
You were still in fear. Yeah, that's the shock coming afterwards. But at the time, what did you feel?
I'm not confident
in that. No, okay. Now, understandably, you want him to stop robbing. I can understand how you're looking at it. And I'm not quite sure how to articulate it. But it feels to me as if there's an idea about how things should be.
Is that what you call the Protestant?
Yes.
Actually,
it's more Puritan. Yeah. I used the word Protestant there. Protestant,
okay.
Yeah. No, Puritan was back here. And we have these ideas of how the world should work. So he goes to jail, he has time to reconsider things. It's not what actually happens in practice, but I don't want to get into a discussion of our penal system. Yeah. It's more that what can you do to ease his suffering?
Mm-hmm.
right in that moment. Well, what's he going to be experiencing? He's going to be experiencing fear about getting caught. So what can you do to ease his suffering? You don't like it, do you? Did you get my point?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? These are good. I mean, this is reflection, is pushing things to this level. And this is where it starts to bite inside, and that's the purpose of reflection. So this is good. Chuck?
Well, my first reaction was go after him and get it back. Yeah, it's sort of a tightening up inside. And, you know, it really sort of rubbed me the wrong way, the whole thing. And then thinking, he not only got my wallet, but let's give him a little bit more money to fill out his wallet. Just sort of, it was... I can see where everything's coming from, but it was sort of like not the way I usually do things.
That's right, yeah.
And so that's...
So you felt it rubbing against stuff.
Right.
Good. And?
Go back to... I never got past the first line of all suffering comes from when the bottom fell out. I was sideways, upside down, and for 2 days, I didn't look at it as a... taking and sending.
Thing.
So it's an opening and closing.
Go on.
Just, if I let that go, I just felt this expansiveness. And then I got so scared and felt a sense of security just gone because you got to be happy, you know. It's not even internally, it's externally too. And that all of a sudden...
You got to have all of these things?
Well, no, not material things, but emotionally, or I mean, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, money in the bank or the job or anything like that, but just a sense of well-being, of security.
Okay. Security, I think you'll agree, is an illusion. It doesn't exist. Let's talk about sense of well-being. Where does the sense of well-being come from? How does the sense of well-being arise?
I think that was the dichotomy or juxtaposition within me. If I close, it came from what I feel is a support network from within, my own structures holding myself erect. And if I let that go and it all fell down, I almost felt more secure. It was scarier, but I felt more secure.
Uh-huh, okay, yes. Say a bit more about that, I think it'll be helpful to people.
It's almost like to reach the stage of being able to take and send, you have to let the rest of it go to get there.
Mm-hmm. And what's the rest of it?
Your feelings of the illusion of safety and security. Yeah.
Trying to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And when you open that way, what do you experience? Is it scarier?
Oh, fear. Fear. Absolute fear.
Yeah. But what else besides the fear? It's not the only thing you experienced.
The curiousness.
Uh-huh. I'm going to suggest that there may have been another element also. A different kind of balance. In your relationship with the world. Does that ring any bells? If you look, what? Okay, sorry, I thought you said something. ordinarily, our relationship with the world is me here, the world here. Okay? Take it all here. Okay? Taking and sending, you look at it this way. And that irritates the hell out of us. Also frightens the hell out of us. But by doing this, we're actually correcting this. And we find this. I'm not going to say we find this, because that doesn't exist. We find this. There's an ongoing play that goes on. And so sometimes, yes, we need to eat, we eat. And we enjoy things. But we recognize those as comings and goings. And we don't try to just keep them coming and holding on to them, because they don't last. And then they go, and we can let them go somewhere else, which is, those of you who have read Shanti Deva, it's all about appreciating the joys that other people experience. But that's how the world actually is, and though we don't usually live in it that way. And that's what I mean about a different kind of balance, where things move and everything is in motion. But within that, there's a different kind of balance which isn't nearly as which isn't static at all. But we can't hold on to a sense of self in the same way. And that's the frightening part. But we find that we can be in that world. And it's okay. In fact, actually it's more than okay. It's actually quite freeing. Does that fit with your experience? Good. Very good. Gosh. Time goes when you're having fun. Let's turn to the verse 13. Very few people commented on that, except for the translation point. Even if you have done nothing at all, and someone still tries to take your head off, spurred by compassion, take all his or her evil into you. I don't know about you, but I've always found one of the more difficult situations is to be being blamed for something I didn't do. Anybody else have a problem with that one? Now, when somebody's blaming you for something you didn't do, what's going on in that other person? Pardon?
Rejection.
Yeah. You know you didn't do it. So they have to be hurting. A lot. Maybe they're operating under ignorance. Maybe somebody told them they did it. I mean, I got caught in that one big time many years ago, when my teacher was told that I had done something that I hadn't done. And Rinpoche believed the other person. That was a real fun situation. Didn't like that one at all. And Rinpoche was such that, you know, if you were in his system, that was that. You didn't get to argue your point at all. So, now, what was happening is that this other person was defending his territory like mad and was willing to sacrifice my relationship with my teacher in order to defend his thing. That's pretty heavy-duty stuff. In Vajrayana, that's about approximately the same level as murder, if you're willing to destroy the relationship between the teacher and student. Didn't, but that person was willing to do that. So, how equanimous and how at ease are you if you're willing to commit murder?
If you're willing to commit what?
Commit murder. You know? No, you're not. You're really, really churned up. So when you have a person who's that churned up, what's the appropriate response? Yeah. Yeah. It's really hard. I will admit, I did not feel much compassion for this person. I felt quite bitter about it for a long time. But in what we're aspiring to here, I mean, in both of these, and we've got three or four more verses along the same lines, one of the things that I have found really helpful, and I know that those of you, I've done this one-on-one with many of you at one point or another, when somebody does something which, you know, infringes on your territory, boundary or whatever, or just doesn't make any sense, ask yourself, where would I have to be in order to do that? I found this an extremely useful technique. And people say, well, I'd never do that. And I say, that's fine. Okay. I know you'd never do that. But where would you have to be if you actually did that? And it doesn't take very long for most people to understand they would have to be pretty churned up to do some of these kinds of things. And that changes everything right there, because you begin to see what must be going on in the other person, because we're not that dissimilar. Okay. So, Joe?
I just want to ask something before we finish. Is that just about putting these three together. May I ask that?
Okay.
If 11 is describing Tongva, exchange completely your happiness with others, are the directions in 12 and 13, one of which is dedicate, and the other one is take evil into you, are those the two sides of taking and sending? Or
there's
something separate?
No, what's really going on here is 11 is general taking and sending. Right. 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16, and 17 are all, those six verses, are all how to respond to different expressions of anger. Which is what? Pardon? Yeah, what other people? But if you look at them, they're all of these things are motivated by anger.
No. What exactly does it mean when you say, I know how to do Tonglen, sort of. What does it mean when it says dedicate to somebody your body, your wealth, and all the good?
Well, okay, the thief has taken a whole bunch of things from you, or maybe they've just tried to. You still have it. Then, in your practice, you think, okay, this person's in need. May he have everything that I want, I have?
Okay. Got it.
And when this person blames you, you think, oh, this person did something horrible, something evil. He blamed me for something that I didn't do. He made up lies. He did this, he did that. That's really bad karma for this person. May all that bad karma come into me. So may he be free of it, because that's going to cause him a tremendous amount of suffering. I'm willing to experience that suffering. Okay? Now, what nobody's made a comment on, or maybe one person made a comment on this, but I want to you to keep this in mind over the next week. Does any part of your psyche steal from you?
It what? Yeah.
Does any part of your psyche steal from you?
Yes.
Does any part of your psyche blame you for things that you haven't done?
Yeah.
So, I'll leave the other ones to you, but you might think about this. Now, usually, when that happens, we shut those parts of our mind off. Does this help them? when we put them in jail, does the Sultan never? Do they? No, they don't usually do that. So how do you work with that? That's something I'd like you to think about and reflect on over the next couple of weeks, the next week. Okay. We're going to do the next four verses, which will be 14, 15, 16, and 17. Because that completes that unit. I didn't want to give the whole unit out for 1 week, but those four will be fine. And they say they're all different ways which would normally incite anger in you. So it's about really how to work with anger. And you get a pretty good picture of Tibetan society from here, too.